Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. Follow me on Twitter at TheRealMarkLane. I'm the managing editor of the Texans Wire, and you can follow them on Twitter at The Texans Wire. And of course, TexansWire.USAToday.com should be your homepage if it isn't already. I'm joined, as always, by John Crumpler, lead analyst at the Texans Wire. John, we finally made it. Football is at the end, is this weekend. How you doing, partner?
Mark, I'm doing fantastic. It just feels good to have hit this point in the season. We know the roster. We know the depth chart. For me, it's been just a pretty transformative offseason in my investment in my writing and getting to know this community. And I love it. And I'm so excited to watch some Texans football this week.
Yeah, it's finally here. They take on the Colts, of course, at noon Central Time on CBS. And, you know, I think this is really the best matchup you could possibly have. So when you talk about the Texans taking on the Colts, I mean, it's their biggest boogeyman. It's their biggest problem. And they beat them 31 points each time. Everyone likes to say 62-3, but that's just so hokey, so I'm not going to do it. But it's, if they can come out against their biggest bully in 2021, in my opinion, and at least get a few shots in, even if they lose, I think it'll generate optimism for the fans with regards to the direction of the season. Because the reality is, there's a lot of optimism coming into this game, because the optimism's never really stopped since the Lovie Smith press conference.
No, and Mark, do you think it's all deserved optimism before I start talking about the game? Because part of it is almost a little artificial how optimistic the fans, and it's also starting to rub off on me, feel going into this game.
No, I don't think it's – I really don't, because the Texans have been so horrendous. They have been – they went through an absolute hellscape in 2021. I don't think it's artificial at all. And even if it was artificial, the fans and the columnists are so stone-hearted from everything that happened in 21, they wouldn't allow artificial optimism. So that's why I'm saying, no, I don't think it's artificial at all. I think it's real. I don't know how long it'll last, but I think it's real.
Yeah, and I think this game is scary because it could go so many different ways. I think it's a good team to start out with because it doesn't project as a particularly explosive offense. It's going to be a lot of like rhythmic passing from Matt Ryan and them pounding the ball with Jonathan Taylor. But on one hand, you know, maybe the Texans come out. Indianapolis has no idea, just like the rest of us, what to expect from Pep Hamilton's scheme. Damian Pierce is able to run the ball. It puts Brandon Cooks and Nico Collins in good spots, and they score. Matt Ryan isn't quite synced up yet with his receivers. You force a turnover or two that you need to grind out like a 24-21 win. But on the other hand, I could see a reality where Indianapolis comes in and they have one of the best defensive tackle duos in the league. They bully Houston on the interior, and Pierce, despite all of his talent, just keeps running into defensive linemen. He can't get to the next level. Davis Mills isn't able to capitalize against Stephon Gilmore and a pretty nice Indianapolis corner crew. And then the defense is just left to try to keep stopping Jonathan Taylor. And if there's one thing I'm concerned about with the defense, it's that they largely chose to run it back with the same interior defensive lineman and linebacking group from last year. If Taylor just keeps getting 6-7 yards a pop, breaks one for 35, you know, it could get ugly quick. And maybe that's one of the things that's so exciting about this game, is this team, we don't know what they are yet. We probably have a better idea of what Indianapolis is than Houston, but we expect a lot from how Lovie Smith has made this team discipline and the attitude that he's brought to the building, the level of respect that he demands. And I just can't wait to see it.
last year the first one was an ugly game. And you know, at halftime it was 10-3 Indianapolis. And it wasn't until the second half where the run game just pounded and it finally broke. And then Jonathan Taylor, that's how he got those 145 yards. It was mostly in the second half. If this truly is a team that's built to win ugly ball games and they're able to put points on the board and just kind of control the pace of the game, come up with some takeaways, then I don't think that because they have the same defensive tackle duo and the same linebacking core, that that's going to be that big of a problem. I mean, if Houston's scoring points, then that, you know, I don't see repeats of anything like 31-3 or anything on along the lines of a 31-10. In USA Today Sports Weekly, I wrote the capsule for the game, and I had Indianapolis winning 27-20. You know, I think that it's kind of a veteran team, established coaching staff, that, you know, that they're made for moments like this. You've got a Texans team really trying to find itself. And, you know, I think that kind of will make the difference in the ball game of first through third quarters. I think the Texans are going to get their blows in. You know, I think Derek Stingley and Jalen Petrie are going to make their presences known during the first three quarters of the game.
Mm-hmm. They're too talented not to. And I'll just continue. I like what you say about the difference between this year and last year, because the defense could hold up. But one of the problems with the defense is that they were so often put in bad spots with drive stalling out. You're right. The question probably comes down to, can Davis Mills and the offense, we're a broken record at this point, score enough points to make this one competitive? Because like you said, a very veteran-led Indianapolis team, they probably have a really high floor with how successfully they can run the ball. And Matt Ryan is not a very turnover-prone quarterback when he's comfortable, and I think he'll be comfortable behind that offensive line. We'll see how our edge rushers do. And he fits really well to the strengths of their receivers like Pittman, Pierce, and that they need to be thrown open. Where last year, I almost think that vertical aspect of Indianapolis' game was lost because Wentz is not a window thrower like that.
And that's what I'm saying is there may be an element with Matt Ryan, and it's a veteran team, and they'll be able to make those plays in the fourth quarter to pull away, but I just think that there's going to be some surprise elements to the Texans team, that they're going to have their moments. There's going to be moments of optimism, and then there's going to be growing pains throughout this game. So like I said, I mean, that's my prediction, is 27-20.
Yeah, I think I picked them earlier today. Someone had me on their YouTube channel, and I said 31-24. I think it's a touchdown game. I think the line was -8.5, but can very easily envision Houston, even if it's apparent early that they don't have the same talent, that once Davis Mills is allowed to kind of open up the field and attack vertically without much repercussion, they can sneak in and backdoor cover.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of on the same page with that. The Texans on Wednesday, Coach Levy Smith announced the captain voting results that they held on Monday, September 5th. And you got Davis Mills, Brandon Cooks representing the offense, defensive end Jerry Hughes, and linebacker Christian Kirksey represent the defense. And of course, long snapper, the Pro Bowler John Weeks, who will be starting in his 194th game on Sunday, which extends the Texans' record. He represents the special teams. So here's my question to you, John. Do you think that Hughes and Kirksey being the team captains represents kind of a a void of leadership on the defensive side of the ball?
I would not go anywhere near that far. I think that, I mean, they're definitely the elder statesmen of the group, and they're not the most talented, but I think they play very important positions, and they have a lot of experience in this league. Christian Kirksey, he plays that middle linebacker role, really the brains, the captain of the defense, and how they're supposed to be organized from down to down. And he was here last year. And meanwhile, Hughes has emerged as really the best complementary edge rusher to Jonathan Grenard. So I like that they're captains. I mean, it would be awesome if Petrie or Stingley had stepped up into that. But by virtue of playing safety and by playing corner, where especially Stingley, he's on an island, that just wasn't going to happen this year. We know that this is a veteran-led defense. That's Lovey's bread and butter. And we kind of assumed with the roster configuration he would lean on those guys. So I'm not surprised by it. And I don't think it's an indictment on the team either.
Why not Jonathan Grenard? That's kind of my point, is he's entering his third season. You take a look at the offense, these are guys that are entering either their second or their third year with a team. I think with Davis Mills, they did it kind of as a vote of confidence to just get someone to rally behind. But with Brandon Cooks, I mean, it's his third season on the team. So with him getting a captaincy, that's just, I mean, it's his team. You know what I mean? So in the same span, Jonathan Grenard's been here. Why didn't he get voted as a team captain? What happened that Jerry Hughes, who's only been here just for the offseason program and training camp, everybody's gravitating towards him. And then Christian Kirksey, it's his second year. You got some continuity. And this is really kind of one of the problems with having such a veteran team where you're plugging holes amid a rebuild is, yeah, I mean, you're going to get guys like that. I can't really, you know, Garrett Wallow, for as much talk as there's been about him in the offseason program and training camp, obviously didn't take a big enough step to take a captain role. So, you know, with Kirksey getting it, it's no big deal. It's just really, for me, why not Jonathan Grenard? Why Jerry Hughes?
All right, Mark, I'll counter with this and tell me if you think this is fair. I mean, I might imagine that there's only so many opportunities to really to speak and to lead in a locker room. I think Davis Mills very naturally has that opportunity as the quarterback. He has to pilot and direct the offense from play to play. I think that Brandon Cooks is thrown into that role by virtue of his immense talent, and that, I mean, when we were there at practice, clearly the best player on the field, and it's not particularly close. Weeks has been there for so long. He is the most elder statesman of the group. Kirksey is leading the defense. And then after that, you know, is Grenard's talent enough to create that space where he can talk? I don't know if it's in the same caliber. That's how Cooks gets there. And then meanwhile, I think Hughes is able to speak from that veteran perspective, and that everyone's coming to him and asking questions, that it doesn't really surprise me. Do you think that's fair, that maybe for a young defensive end who hasn't exactly exploded yet? You know, Grenard's ascending, but we're not talking about young J.J. Watt here, at least not yet, that maybe he just hasn't had that opportunity to step into leadership to that extent?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, just that's the way that I look at it, is there's still kind of a leadership vacuum on the defense. Doesn't mean that they're bad captains per se. I'm just saying that you're starting to see kind of how the Casario system has taken over on offense. You got your homegrown leaders there. You don't exactly have your homegrown leaders yet on defense. And hey, next year it'll probably change with, like you said, Petrie, with Stingley, maybe they get one of those captain spots. But to me, that's just part of the evolution of really the Casario way taking ownership of the team, is by having those guys that he brought in just established as cornerstones in the locker room.
And I have no doubt in my mind that Jalen Petrie will be a captain next year. I mean, the vocal leader that we watched at Baylor, Stingley – I mean, people even talked about it in his scouting profile that he was a bit on the quieter side at LSU. But Petrie was a legend at Baylor. He was the one who stayed, led that defense his last season there. I think between his personality and just the opportunity that he has, I've written before on the Texans Wire, for those who haven't read it, that I believe for better or for worse, probably for worse, Jalen Petrie will lead the 2022 Texans in tackles. He's going to be everywhere on the field. He's going to be vocal in the locker room. I think that's the kind of guy who will be a captain this year, upcoming year. But until then, like you said, it's taken a bit of time for Caserio to reshape things. Obviously, a bit of a bonus when you come in and the Brandon Cooks trade, for as bad as it looked in the time, has worked out spectacularly. And Davis Mills is really surprised of how well he stepped into that leadership role, at least for expectations of a third-round pick. So I think it needs one more year until we start to see the young leaders, but I don't think that's an indictment on the current infrastructure.
Yeah, things really are changing around NRG Stadium. Take, for example, Cal McNair, who did a Reddit AMA. Of all the things I never thought Cal McNair would do, just because I didn't even think he knew what Reddit was. The chairman and CEO of the Houston Texans did a Reddit Ask Me Anything on Wednesday. And I liked it. I really liked it because this is part of what needed to happen in 2021, was they needed the leader of the franchise to come out and just kind of meet the fans where they were at and just let them know things are going to be okay, or, you know, and even though it's not exactly the same hot water and bad situation as it was in 2021, the fact that he's doing it now, even though you're still technically amid a rebuild, I like it. I like it. He's trying to win the fans back, and I approve.
I love it, and I think it's such a brilliant win-win because it's definitely going to reach the fan base, those who care enough to be on Reddit and really is still invested in the team, and it'll reach casual fans in that, you know, you and I are going to aggregate it, tweet about it, write articles. But then all these things, he dropped some real nuggets of information there. He talked about changing the uniforms. He addressed the does he play video games in his office rumor. He announced a jersey buyback for so many of us that have these number 4 jerseys just hanging in our closets that, you know, I wouldn't be caught dead in today.
Why? What's wrong with Philip Dorsett?
It's a great question, Mark. But, you know, I think now he gets to enjoy that, and really it's something he didn't have to do. And it's really seen as a step of good faith. And then when he goes to publicly announce these things, when they have a formal press release about we're conducting a fan survey to change the uniforms, or, you know, mid-September when the team announces next month we're doing a jersey buyback, they'll get the positive PR again. So it's not exactly something I would have ever expected from Cal McNair. Like you said, I'm not familiar with billionaire owners getting on Reddit or really knowing what's going on there. But it's a great look. It's easy. It looked like a win-win.
Yeah, and like I said, I like that he addressed some of the fun stuff, like the video games that he came out and he said Zelda. Okay, like that's what I mean. He didn't just go straight into, well, you know, I actually I watched tape and blah blah blah. He said Zelda. Like, that's what I mean, was he showed his personality.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just like when, and, you know, he grilled the, you know, the hot dogs and everything. When we were there at Texans training camp, like, that's what I mean, is he's opening up. He's being more approachable and affable. And I think that the fans are taking to that. And that's what's been missing around NRG Stadium for the past 2 seasons, regardless, okay, is just that sense of community, because that was broken, I would say, during COVID because of all of the attendance restrictions. And so, you know, so you combine that with the losing and so forth, but, and then you have 2021, and so it was all broken. And you see that starting to come back, and that's what's making it fun for the Texans again, is that sense of community's coming back. I don't know if that's going to translate to wins, probably be a bumpy season, but at least the community's starting to come back, and there's a sense of, you know, everybody's in this together. I hate to use such a phrase that's been cheapened over the past 32 months, but there you go.
And if I can add one more thing that I'd love to hear your thoughts on, I was very impressed that Cal McNair, he was not defensive at all in this, and I think there was an opportunity to do so. People asked questions about Jack Easterby, which I thought he handled with grace. He did redirect to say he wanted to talk about the players, but he said they're a big help to Nick and Lovey in the building and that everyone has their part. The video game, you know, that came out under the context of this is a clown organization that Deshaun Watson shouldn't be playing for, when the entire media circus, pretty much a 180 from where they are now, everyone was behind Deshaun, that he should get a trade from Houston, that it was unacceptable to ask him to play for that franchise. And, you know, Cal, he answered it without acknowledging that circumstance and without it being bitter about it. Like you said, he even showed his personality. And I just wasn't expecting that. It went really well. And, you know, there could have been disaster potential there, but it was really well handled. And like you said, we don't know if it'll lead to wins, but if you're going to be 6-11, which is where I've picked them this year, you want fans to have some things to feel good about. And this is a gesture that makes it easier to look at the team as a glass half full situation.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you have the draft picks that are forthcoming in 23 and also 24, it just, I think, buoys fans that they can endure the losing, they can put up with it, and they can root against the Cleveland Browns on multiple levels. You know, so that's what Texans fans have for the next 2 years, is they can root for their team and they can root against someone else. So it's like twice the football involvement over the next two seasons. So you've really got 34 games a year that Texans fans are emotionally invested in. And as well, and just like how you want your team to win and your team is playoff caliber, well, the Browns are NFL draft caliber, let's say. So, you know, you're not really, if you're a Texans fan, you're not really going to be disappointed when you're rooting for the Browns to lose. I just think there's so much optimism with the Texans that having that sense of community that Cal's trying to restore, I think it's going to pay off when the team is finally put back together. And then you could see, like what J.J. Watt said, when they beat the Bengals in 2011, and it was, he called it Beatlemania. I think you'll see that again when they get in the play. They have their first home playoff game, and they cream someone. You'll see that again that you saw in the 2011 wild card.
Hey, as long as we don't see the letter jackets come back, I'm cool.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Those were crazy.
Were you covering the team when that happened?
No.
You weren't on the Texans beat yet.
No, I was barely on anything at that point.
I remember that so well. Such a ridiculous gesture against the dynasty of the 2000s. But, like, we move on. It's going to be Beatles Mania again. I would love a return to the Watt-era Texans, at least the feelings around the team there.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like when your favorite buffet gets shut down by the health department and you've just got to wait for it to reopen so you can have, you know, that salmon. Those salmon patties that you really enjoyed, it's kind of like that, but good days are around the corner. And with that said, let me ask you this. We're hours away from kickoff. What's your record for the Houston Texans now? Now that we've seen everything, the free agency, schedule release, the draft, the training camp, the preseason, what is your record for the Texans now?
So right now their Vegas over under is 4.5 wins. And their over under for me, where I start to struggle to pick them, is 5.5. So I have the Texans between 5 and 6 wins, and because I love the team and I'm kind of drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit, I think I put them at 6 and 11. I had the opportunity to speak with John McClain this week, which I really appreciated. And I got to process some of the thoughts, and I left that conversation agreeing with him that the baseline for this team is so much higher this year. I think last year they were a poorly coached squad under David Culley, and that was generally undisciplined. There were mistakes on the coaching end that just should not have happened. I think people will remember the New England game, one of the decisions against the Cleveland Browns, and that's not going to be there this year. I think the talent across the board is better. They still don't have enough playmakers of the all-pro caliber that win you games and playoff games, but their baseline is better, and they do have the young guys that are going to start to turn into that. I think Petrie and Stingley, they can turn the tide of a game with their level of talent, and that wasn't there last year. I don't think Mills can be worse than he was last season, but, you know, every year there seems to be a sophomore quarterback, and you get just a little more film, and the story starts to change, so we'll have to watch closely. But in terms of the defense being better with the talent, their ability to run the ball, and I do like Nico Collins a lot this year. I just think they should be able to be competitive in the games that are winnable. In my season preview, I wrote that it's going to be difficult to win games where their talent is worse and their quarterback play is worse. But there are 8 games on the schedule where I don't think that that's obvious or clear, and I can see them coming away with some of those. So 6 wins. Mark, where are you sitting?
7 and 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 7. I'm going to do it. I'll say 7 wins because I think that there's some winnable games on the schedule. I think there were coaching errors. Like, take, for example, last year against New England. If Lovie Smith is the coach in that game, they win. And
yes, absolutely.
And it wasn't just, like, that game because it was close. There were other points in other ball games that were horrendous blowouts that it's the same thing. It was because of the lack of coaching depth that provided for the opportunity to have a blowout. And I think you're going to see a lot of those mitigated. And then, you know, Houston's punching with people to the fourth quarter and they, you know, get a takeaway or something. I think that Here's the deal. Lovie Smith, this is before Devin Hester. Okay. He took the Bears to 11-5, I believe it was, in 05. They won the NFC North. He's done a lot without good quarterback play. And if he has really, truly learned on adapted on defense, then I think that you could see, you know, like I said, just some fortune come their way. So that's why I say 7 and 10. I think that they can cultivate 7 wins. And that's very optimistic. I think their actual range for games to win this year is 5-7, but I'm just going to go with the top end and say 7.
I could see them being at 3 or 4 if things bottomed out. Like, I mean, if there was an injury on offense to Brandon Cooks, Damian Pierce, or Davis Mills, do you think it's unfair to say that's immediately the worst offense in the league?
Yes, it is. And you saw it in the preseason without Cooks with the first team offense, because it was just like, oh my gosh, they'll never be able to move the ball. Like against the Rams, for example, you had no Damian Pierce, no Brandon Cooks, and it just looked like, oh my gosh, they'll never, it's 2011 all over again.
It was like, what are we doing out here? And then one other thing I wanted to, I think there's just so much variance with this team, because you're right, I could see 7 wins, but Mark, on a scale of 1 to 10, if I told you the team started 0-5 and they were going into the bye week without a win, how shocked would you be?
I'd be shocked. I really would, because I'd figure they'd at least be 1-4.
Yeah, between Chicago and Jacksonville, I do think they'll get one. But Indianapolis, Denver, and the Chargers in your first three frames is not a soft entrance.
Right, but that's what I'm saying is, if they're 0-5, then it's just like, what happened? Because you figure the Chicago game, they're going to come away. Because it's in September, weather is not going to be a factor. So you're basically going to get them with the best conditions you could possibly hope for. And the Bears are still trying to figure some things out. Would I want the Bears in December, even in NRG Stadium? Probably not, because Justin Fields might be a little better by that point. But I don't think he is. I think he's going to be susceptible to the Tampa 2 in week 3. So, like I said, if they go 0-5, I mean, that's very troubling. And you would have to figure that there's some sort of availability issues, as you alluded to. That's the other thing I would have to take in. But if everybody's healthy and they go 0-5 into the bye, yeah, I'd be shocked.
Yeah. No, I hear you. It's going to be a fun season. I just want to see how it goes, because we're saying this floor exists, and I do believe it. But after last year, I would like to be validated and see it before I really rest reassured that they're not going to be picking in the top three again.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, I got a question for you. So if Damian Pierce were a menu item at Chick-fil-A, would he be the waffle fries? Would he be a grilled chicken sandwich? Would he be the peach tea shake? What would Damian Pierce be if he were a Chick-fil-A menu item?
You know, Damian Pierce might be the chicken strips. And hear me out, because you know the Nuggets are great, and there's a really strong baseline for what greatness looks like. But the strips, you know, there's some unknown to it. It's a little different. There's some uncertainty. It came around a little later, and that's how I feel about Damian Pierce. You know, late to the party, fourth-round draft pick, but, you know, on the field, he looks the part. It tastes the same, but can it be the same as the Nuggets? That's what I might say. Damian Pierce is the chicken strips, and I'm excited to see how that performs on the market.
I think Rex Burkhead would be the Nuggets.
That's slander, though. The Nuggets are so good. They're too good to be Rex Burkhead. No.
Okay, then he can be the Chick-fil-A sauce.
You know, I feel like Arian Foster is the Nuggets in terms of, like, we know this is great. But then there's this new menu item that has some of these similar traits, you know. It's fried, but it's a different shape and continuity here. And you just have to see if it's actually going to taste as good. And that's the kind of hype that Damian Pierce has right now.
Yeah, and I think of all the players, I think he's got the most hype. I meant of the rookies, he's got the most hype coming into this game. You figure he was the first-round pick.
I mean, people are more excited. They're probably only Davis Mills is carrying bigger expectations and more excitement than Damian Pierce. I mean, he's getting NFL Now segments. He might be the most popular player on the team right now because of fantasy football and how devoid the league is of elite running backs right now.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. There's a really big market for Damian Pierce to seize. And 167 hours from now, John, we will be in the thick of it. We'll be talking about week one and then previewing week two. It'll be a lot of fun. I can't believe it's here.
I can't either, Mark, and, you know, I'm glad we're doing this podcast, and I'm excited for you and I to have weekly games to talk about. We made it.
Yeah, we did. All right. Take us out.
Again, you guys can follow me on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. Make sure you're following Mark at The Real Mark Lane. Make sure you're following the Texans Wire at The Texans Wire.
make the Texans Wire your homepage. If you haven't read my season preview, put my heart and soul into it. Maybe the best 3,500 words I've ever written. Go check it out. Thanks for listening, and everyone, have a great morning.